Take the bass line out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another lowly anticipated edition of the Hardwood Knock podcast. I am coming at you, Tampa Valley, as always, with my fine colleague, Andy Bailey. There are some stuff that Andy and I have to talk about that's going to make him maybe a little uneasy or nervous coming up with free agency, but we're going to have to start somewhere else first. Although I would like to start, though, with free agency right around the corner and Gordon Hayward on the open market, and Andy being something of a Jazz supporter, I would like to know how you were feeling, Andy.
I'm nervous. As we said before we started recording,
you're a pessimist.
I'm a very pessimistic sports fan. A lot of my friends and family joke about it. Like, when I'm just convinced that the Broncos are going to lose, they win, and other teams that I do the same thing. So maybe this is just the pessimist in me, but I've already written two articles for Bleacher Report where I predict that Hayward goes to the Celtics. I will adamantly defend the fact that I think that Utah is the better team when he's on the team. But there are other factors at play that make me think he's going east. We talked about him before we started recording. I think the East is obviously weaker than the West right now. It has a chance to get even weaker if Paul George and LeBron James go West over the next couple of years. Kyle Lowry might go West.
Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Jimmy Butler just went West. I didn't even think of that.
That's another one. Yeah, Jimmy Butler just went West. The Bulls are going to drop off the face of the Eastern Conference for the next couple of years. And then plus the thing that's always scared me and scares me even more since listening to the Ringer's Mark Titus talk about it is the connection between Hayward and Brad Stevens. And I think it's more than just your typical player college coach situation. Like, Hayward had a really close relationship with him in college. He was loyal to Stevens when Purdue tried to sweep in and steal him at the last minute with a scholarship. And Hayward's family is like big Purdue fans, I guess. So there's just a lot of sort of other factors beyond just what the team will look like in the immediate future that makes me very, very nervous that he's going to go to Boston.
Well, I think we're going to have to come back to that at some point, but I agree with whatever you just said. And the only thing I'll add to it is that, and even on this podcast, I was predicting Hayward was going to go back to Utah, but I've started predicting Hayward to Boston over the last 48 hours when going on radio shows.
Yeah, so, if something feels weird about it, it just feels less and less likely for Utah. And that's, again, maybe that's just the pessimist in me. But
right, that'll definitely have to come up again, but I think we need to start with the Chris Paul trade that no one saw coming. I believe both of us were just saying how we needed to double check that it was a real Woj that tweeted it because it was so random.
Yeah, I think Sam Esfandiari from Warriors World said something about it, him having to check for the blue check mark multiple times. I honestly think the thought crossed my mind because I get mobile notifications from Woj during the offseason.
Same.
And I think the first thought I had was, oh my gosh, how did the fake Woj's like infiltrate the mobile notifications? It was just a split second, but then I was like, holy crap, the only way I get a notification is if it's actually him. So this actually just happened. It blew my mind. I know there were rumblings or whisperings for a couple of days that all of a sudden Houston was a serious suitor, but I don't think anybody saw it going down in this fashion. And I think even with all the rumors sort of creeping up, it still felt like the Clippers and the Spurs were sort of the top two options for him. It took me by complete surprise.
Literally a couple hours before the news broke, I had written an article about free agent flight risks, and I put like a meter on how likely they were to leave, and I came up with like stupid ways to say it, and Chris Paul's classification was Spurs or bust. And then I had to delete it like 2 hours later because he was a Rocket. It's interesting.
Spurs just made so much more sense to me.
Yeah, this whole talk about, oh, he wanted to play with another ball handler and play off the ball. Has he not watched Kawhi Leonard the past 2 years?
Yeah, like that's crazy to me.
So here's the thing that I want to start with first. And it wasn't an unfair trade. if Paul was actually, the Clippers could have tried to call his bluff if he told them he was going to the Rockets, but the fact that he told them, this isn't a, you know, Paul George situation where he's a year out and he made it very public that he was only going to go to the Lakers, so he just torpedoed his own trade value, which is actually now on the upswing because of this trade, I believe, but we'll get to that. You know, Chris Paul, I don't know if it was the classy thing, but like he gives the Clippers a heads up before free agency even starts when he can still opt back into his contract. And they were able to get, I think, under the circumstances, a very good haul. Like Patrick Beverley's contract is probably the second or third best contract in the NBA. Lou Williams is like a higher grade Jamal Crawford at this point.
Much, much higher grade.
We don't know what, you know, they really have in Harrell or Sam Decker, but Harrell's fun. He's like a small ball five, and if you move on from, you know, if you start trading DeAndre and entertain all that stuff, so I think the haul was fine. But here's, I don't have a problem with the package itself, and you have a pick, and that's where I want to start. The Ted Steven rule is literally the stupidest thing ever. Like, the Rockets traded away their 2017 pick to the Lakers for Lou Williams. But because the draft is over, the 2018 draft is no longer considered a future draft, so the Rockets can trade pick. So it's just like, that's dumb. This is just like, can things reset at the same time? Like, because Chris Paul is still on a contract or made decisions on a contract from 2016, 2017, yet we're already talking about how the drafts are in effect. You know, the 2018 draft isn't a future draft anymore. Like, just reset everything at the same time. And that should that just makes the idea of something like this a little bit more difficult. I'm just not, you know, like basically the Ted Steven rule. It really only is just or Steppen. What? How do you pronounce it? I can't talk. But
I think it's Steppian. But Steppian
rule. Whatever. Just like, so it's basically just stopping like an idiot team like the Kings from saying like we're gonna give you our 2019, 2020, 2021 picks in the same trade, like without any protections or something.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't get over that because it was just like, you like what, like you know, kudos to the Rockets. The things they're doing with the non-guaranteed contracts are fine. I still think the Spurs would have been the better fit, even when you had to talk about as long as you kept Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard and you maintain some of that flexibility for summer 2018. I still think they'd be the better fit. Harden and Chris Paul will work it out. I think this is going to be interesting though, in terms of what it does to some other free agents, or I guess the trade market. Like, we know the Rockets are interested in Paul George, and so now all of a sudden, if you have them just willing to throw a 2020 and 2022 pick at the Pacers, that forces the Celtics to come up on their offer. And if you all of a sudden have Houston and the Celtics involved with the Cleveland Cavaliers and a three-team deal involving Kevin Love looming, the Lakers might consider upping their offer, and all of a sudden you're getting this trade value for George. But now I'm wondering, if you're a free agent, we know there's no incentive to assign and trade financially unless you want to join a team that doesn't have cap space. And now Houston, I feel like, all of a sudden becomes that destination. And they still have, you know, Clint Capella is a great, you know, cheap on his rookie scale. He's about to need he's extension eligible, I believe, and he'll enter restricted free agency next year. But a nice young rim-running center. What if Paul Millsap wants to go to the Rockets and you just trade Clint Capella and Atlanta's willing to eat Ryan Anderson's contract or something, or you get a third team involved, and maybe a future pick for Paul Millsap.
That's what I'm confused about with Houston having. I think the guy that they could maybe go get is Carmelo Anthony. I don't think they have enough tradable assets to get like real legitimate helpers right now. Like I heard a lot about Paul Millsap right after the trade was made. I can't think of a team that would want to take on Ryan Anderson's contract
right now.
I think you're right. Clint Capella is probably a tradable deal, but that's a guy I would want to hang on to now that I have Chris Paul. And you see what Chris Paul did for DeAndre Jordan. I think he'll suddenly become more valuable with two amazing playmakers setting him up. So if I was Houston, I would want to hang on to him. I think he could be super valuable. I don't really necessarily even know how they'd get Carmelo Anthony unless they do go ahead with a buyout, but it sounds like if he's bought out, he's just going to go to Cleveland. So to me, this is kind of the end for Houston. I don't see how they can make many more moves. At least it's not all that plausible to me.
So I don't think it's the end, and whether or not they actually, I guess.
I mean, I don't doubt that they're trying. Right, I just can't imagine many teams would want what they can offer.
I think they're going to come remarkably close to getting a big name. And just hypothetically, you know, if they're willing, you can trade Eric Gordon's contract into someone's cap space. I'm sure that doesn't need a greaser.
He's another guy that I just.
Right, but
I guess he just won Sixth Man of the Year, but I don't see a ton of value for him either. I guess he's only making like 12, right?
Right. I don't think
so. That's easier to move. But.
I don't think you get value for him, but I think you could trade him into cap space. And then with Ryan.
But Harris, how many teams with cap space want to just take on? I'm not going to call it dead money, but I feel like the teams with cap space are ones that are kind of rebuilding and want young pieces. I mean, here's one thing I keep coming back to, too. It's like Sacramento is going to have $50 million plus in cap space, and every fan in the world thinks they're going to take their team's bad contract. After that, it's maybe Brooklyn, and Philly still has some cap space. But I just don't know if there's as many options out there for teams that are just willing to take on money. I don't know.
I guess Philly wouldn't be an option for Eric Gordon because they have Jared Bayless, but like a team like Philly – like, if you're kind of itching to make a playoff run and you have some cap space, like, Eric Gordon as a sixth man is perfect.
Would you rather have Eric Gordon or just sign J.J. Redick outright, though?
But they could do both, is my point. Like, you put Redick in the starting lineup and you have Eric Gordon coming off the bench, and that shooting combination would be...
How much cap space do they have?
They can have it, even with the cap dropping, they can get to around $50 million if they...
I didn't realize it was that much. I thought it was around 30.
No, waive Gerald Henderson, who's non-guaranteed, and renounce Sergio Rodriguez, and they have a crap ton of cap space.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that is kind of interesting then.
So, like, and maybe that's the only, maybe, you know, I guess that could be it, unless, I don't even, I'm trying to.
I wouldn't be surprised if Brooklyn did something like that, but I think a lot of these teams are also going to see what they can do in free agency first.
Brooklyn, I don't think, would take Gordon without, like, a pot sweetener just because they have, I guess they're all about stockpiling assets, but you already have. You took on D'Angelo Russell. You have Jeremy Lin, Sean Kilpatrick. Maybe Miami, if they don't want to pay Dion Waiters, just sees Eric Gordon as like, and they're willing to take.
Yeah, so that's another team that's going to have to see what happens in free agency first, though. I would think.
Right. Well, here's, I guess what I was getting at is technically. So if you can trade Eric Gordon into someone's cap space, which I believe is feasible, and then you're willing to move Ryan Anderson into the Kings cap space with a pick, like a 2020 first round pick. And I don't, maybe that doesn't get it done. Maybe you have to include a second. But if you're willing to do that, the Rockets can still, because Chris Paul opted in, they can still technically carve out more than $25 million in cap space if they did that. And still have Trevor Ariza.
So, I guess I'm just hung up on I'm mostly hung up on somebody being willing to take Ryan Anderson's contract. But if they did pull it off, where it was like Chris Paul Harden.
Why would they do that, though? Even if you're getting one pick. You're completely rebuilding. Ryan Anderson.
How many years does he have left?
He's got about like 3 years and $60 million. Here's my thing. You're not. I get your pick is gone in 2019, but Ryan Anderson's game isn't gonna age terribly. He's just gonna be there to shoot threes and maybe grab the occasional rebound, maybe score on the occasional drive.
Do you want that guy taking up 20% of your cap though until 2020?
If I'm the Kings and I'm smart, and I realize that this should be like a prolonged rebuild. Even if I'm the Nets, I think the Nets would.
I might need two firsts for that.
Well, that's what Ramona Shelburne, I believe, said on the Low Post today. But I wouldn't. If I'm a team like the Nets, or if I'm a team like the Kings, I would do it for a first round pick. Maybe even a first and a second. But
that's a long time. 2020, three more seasons.
But you're,
I don't know. If they could pull it off, I would be very impressed.
I think they could if they were willing to. But I don't think cap space is the way they're planning on doing this necessarily. I think they're a team that's probably willing to trade away two more future picks, like in 2020 and 2022.
They would still have to send out money because they're going to be capped out.
Right, but that's where Eric Gordon's contract comes in, is you have that $12 million and you just stockpile all these other non-guaranteed deals. So if I'm the Pacers and the Celtics aren't going to give me what I want for Paul George, and the alternative is sending him to the Lakers for like Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle, you're not even going to get both of them, and I'm looking at two future first-round picks, they're kind of a couple years out, but maybe I get Eric Gordon – who might be interesting to play at point guard instead of Lance Stevenson or just some extra scoring. That's a possibility. There are teams that can beat the Rockets' offers But are we sure there's going to be a team that beats it? If that was the offer, Eric Gordon and two future firsts. So I just think, I'm not even saying they'll end up with Paul George. I don't think they're going to end up with Carmelo Anthony. I also don't think he really does what they need. Like, offensively,
I actually think, I think Carmelo would be better than Ryan Anderson in the Ryan Anderson role.
Right. Well, he's easier to switch.
If he was just a stretch four.
Right. He's easier to like, switch on pick and rolls.
Yeah.
I don't know if him and D'Antoni could bury the hatchet, but I also...
That's a concern for sure.
The Rockets aren't... I mean, if the Rockets give up a pick and Ryan Anderson for Carmelo, I think that's a bad trade for the Rockets.
I think that's a bad trade for... Maybe I'm just, like, unreasonably low on Ryan Anderson, but...
Yeah, you need to chill.
I don't love that deal either way. But
if that only happens with a buyout, and I just don't see the Knicks buying out Melo unless he's willing to leave, like, you know, let's say waive his early termination option and then take a pay cut off the top of this season. I just don't see them allowing him to do that. And so I just think they're going to come remarkably close to getting someone, even if they don't. Like, maybe it's Paul George, or maybe they, like, start to come to a framework for a sign and trade with, like, Paul Millsap. I just think with the way they've been loading up on those non-guaranteed deals, I expect something to either happen or come close to happening. And maybe it's a name. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but maybe it's a name we just haven't considered.
Yeah. We certainly didn't consider what went down.
Right.
With them and Chris Paul. If they can't do anything else and they go in with Paul, Harden, Ariza, Anderson, and Capella, are they the second best team in the West?
No.
Are they still worse than the Spurs?
If the Spurs run it back, assuming they don't have like a talent bloodletting, and don't forget the Rockets have Eric Gordon. Like, it's just their core right now is in bed. They have, you know.
I like their roster, especially offensively. Like, there's a little part of me that wonders if both Paul and Harden can average 10 assists.
Right, and so they go six players deep right now very easily. Clint Capella, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza,
and D'Antoni usually doesn't play more than eight anyway. So.
Right, and they retained all of their exceptions, so they have the $8.4 million mid level exception, and maybe that gets you like a Tabo Cephalosha, like part of that, or maybe you use it all.
Yeah,
on
they
PJ.
Would
imagine PJ Tucker on this team.
That would be a good. Yeah.
And you also have
the this is now a team that I think might attract a couple of those like veterans who play for dirt cheap too.
Here's their perfect offseason, and they don't even need like forget about using like turning Anderson and Gordon into like a star. If they were able to sign PJ Tucker to the mid-level exception and then Kyle Korver was just like F it, I'm ring chasing, and then signed for the biannual exception, which is like $3.2 million.
That'd be interesting.
That would be scary as hell.
Do they still have Nene under contract?
No, but I think they could probably... Maybe they get him to come back, too, like on a cheaper
deal. For the cheap, yeah. He played for less than $3 million last year, so...
Yeah, that was the room exception, and I guess most people would probably assume that he would get the biannual from them, but I don't know. I mean, he is coming off that thigh injury during the playoffs. But that would be... that would be their perfect offseason, then. If you can keep Nene and he's just willing to come back... at like the minimum or something close to it, and then Kyle Korver decides to ring chase, and PJ Tucker becomes this mid-level guy. That roster would be all of a sudden you stretch nine deep, and you kind of have some extra defensive versatility with Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, and PJ Tucker. And of course,
yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so
still probably no better than. I would give them a chance at second, depending on what happens with the Spurs, but
they need more. They need like. If they get another star, like if you swing a trade for Paul George, I think you put them in that conversation, or you need to sign like two impact players.
Yeah. I do like it a lot for Houston. I know they gave up a lot in terms of just like actual bodies, but
it wasn't anyone. The only one that like kind of,
yeah, it wasn't
is, like, Beverly.
Really. Yeah. And even he was like, I mean, he's great for them. He's a hard worker, he's the sort of heart and soul of the team.
So yeah, it's,
yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It was like his greatest strength was defense, and Chris Paul's even better than him at that.
Right. I think it helps that Patrick Beverley is like 3 years younger, right? So we don't know how Paul's gonna age on the defensive end. But again, Chris Paul's an upgrade.
I think he'll always be really smart defensively.
Right.
Even as his body starts to slow down, he'll become one of those positional defenders who's just always in the right place. And
Joe Ingles.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that his assist numbers may be depressed a little bit by the fact that he's playing with Harden, but I'm really excited to see what he does in a D'Antoni offense.
That, and he's a pretty good spot-up shooter. So, like, imagine
him playing off the ball.
Yeah, with
somebody
Harden.
Tweeted the stat. Gosh, I wish I could remember who it was, but he had 44 catch-and-shoot opportunities this past season. Paul did, or 44 open catch-and-shoot opportunities. And his effective field goal percentage on him was in the 80s.
That's absurd.
So, yeah, you've got to figure the number of open catch-and-shoots playing with Harden is going to at least double, maybe even triple.
Yeah, the Rockets, I believe, they were first or second in the league in wide-open three-pointers, like, created per game last year.
And, yeah, oh, my gosh. And I get why. I think it was Mark Stein who tweeted that part of the reason he wanted to go to Houston was that opportunity to play off the ball. And I get that for him. He's been very much on the ball his entire career. And when I watched Chris Paul play, whenever he would take a shot, it just felt like it was always going in. So now he gets the chance to to take more shots as like a catch and shoot guy. I think he could be incredibly deadly in that role.
Can I interrupt this podcast with one of the most random trade rumors I've ever just popped up on Twitter? Maybe you've seen it.
No, I haven't. I don't have Twitter up.
So, and I don't want to, I guess, necessarily diminish the potential validity of the report, but this is literally just the most random thing. Mitch Lawrence of SiriusXM NBA Radio and Sporting News just tweeted about 30 minutes ago, can NBA offseason get crazier? Yup, Kyrie Irving's name now linked to Jazz with George Hill going to Cavs and sign and trade, per sources.
No way.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's no way, because I think you have to give up more than Hill to get Kyrie Irving, and the Cavaliers legally can't complete that trade because they'll be hard capped afterwards, which you're not allowed to do in a sign and trade. So, 'tis the season, is all I'll say.
Did you see his follow-up to that?
No, I didn't.
G. Hill to Cavs, Kyrie to Utah, part of potential three-way, with Paul George, the main headliner, joining LeBron, Pacers seeking top picks.
The Cavs would literally... I need to pull up my salary cap article. because... So the luxury tax is $119 million now, which means that the Cavs can't have a payroll more than $123 million after the trade that we're kind of talking about here. And they start off this offseason, and this isn't including, if you subtract like cap holds for Kyle Korver and Deron Williams and James Jones, they're just going to have $128 million on the payroll. So they have to somehow get George Hill on a new contract and Paul George while shaving between $5 and $10 million off their payroll. That's just not like,
yeah, I've never, man, that is wild. I would not. I'm with you.
Oh wait, Eric, wait, I'm in love with Eric Pincus now, who works for Bleacher Report and also Basketball Insiders. Mitch, George Hill, he literally tweeted what I was just saying. Mitch, George Hill can't be part of that to Cavs, a sign and trade triggers a hard cap, Cleveland over that, so it's illegal.
I wonder who this source is that, jeez. Did he quote tweet it or something, Pincus?
No, Pincus just, like, tweeted back at him.
Okay.
So, I said it. Just like that, so, all right, I just thought I'd interrupt with that.
It was a worthwhile interruption.
So, what you were saying, I'm excited to see Paul on the Rockets. I think it'll be a fantastic fit. I still think it would have been a better fit on the Spurs because I do too.
I think that honestly think the only thing that was going to get close to Curry and KD would have been CP3 and Kawhi.
Right, and with the flexibility of if we're looking a little bit ahead, like this, the Spurs would have still had some flexibility next summer too, which would have been interesting. I guess he can play off the ball a little bit more in Houston. But the thing is the Spurs are known for maximizing talent when they're aging. And Mike D'Antoni isn't exactly known for monitoring minutes. The Rockets did a fantastic job limiting minutes with Nene this past season, so maybe, you know, they noticed that, well, James Harden was gassed at the end of the year. He was playing too much, and maybe they'll stagger Chris Paul and Harden so that they can both play, you know, 30 minutes a game or 32 minutes a game, which seems like, certainly for Harden, I think 32 to 33 is probably the sweet spot, and maybe Paul right around there as well. But I still maintain that the Spurs are the better team if they run it back, unless Houston makes some other additions, and I still think Chris Paul would have been a better fit in San Antonio.
I wonder what the Spurs are up to this offseason, too. The fact that they got both Pau Gasol and David Lee to decline their player options is interesting to me.
Right.
Do they have cap space now that that has happened?
The path to it is still clear. I think they might be better off operating as, like, a capped-out team so that they can have the mid-level exception. Like, it just seems you get to keep Patty Mills' cap hold. The path to cap space is there for them. If you still need a good salary dump, but if it's not going to be Parker, it has to be LaMarcus Aldridge. And I think you're at
who the, I would try to be dumping him. I'm sure they'd try to get
I wouldn't dump
something
him.
Out of him,
right? But I think,
maybe dump is a little. We're saying dump a lot. Maybe that's a little too strong, but I would definitely be looking to move him, and maybe they are.
Right. And. And at this point, like, it doesn't need to be, you're not trying to, you know, now we're talking about you want to get in the mix for Kyle Lowry or Paul George. Maybe, probably not Drew Holiday, even though he's younger. But when you're talking about those two guys and when you're kind of looking at the market now, I wrote about this too. Think about all the teams that aren't going to be chasing point guards anymore. The Rockets are gone because they have Chris Paul. The Clippers are, like, quasi-rebuilding and have Patrick Beverley, so they're not, and they don't have cap space. The Kings, Mavericks, the Sixers, Knicks, and who's the other team? I'm forgetting one. Oh, the Lakers, all drafted, like, cornerstone backcourt prospects.
I think the point guard market could
burst.
It and might so, not be too lucrative so, this summer.
Yeah, so my point would be, now all of a sudden maybe George Hill's and Kyle Lowry's price tags come down a little bit, and you're looking at, instead of having to create, you know, $34.7 million in cap space for Chris Paul, you know, $20 million for George Hill is a lot easier, or $25 million for Kyle Lowry is a lot easier. You still have to get
and Lowry. Lowry Leonard is pretty. It's obviously not Chris Paul Leonard, but it's still pretty dang good.
Right, and and I think Kyle Lowry is perfect for that. You know, he's kind of like a middle class version Chris Paul. He's never going to have the floor command that Paul does, and he's not as good defensively.
I might even say, like, upper middle class. He's been really good for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and so he would be a fantastic fit. Again, you still have to get rid of Aldridge because you have to assume that Pau Gasol, you're going to give him, like, at least $7 million a year, like, for 3 years or something. Maybe even $8 million. And I think if you were now... Now all of a sudden you have the flexibility if you really wanted to. If you traded Aldridge's salary, let's just say, and then you could technically keep Patty Mills' cap hold on the books, and you're still looking at a fairly, depending on what you take back for Aldridge, of course, you could still get to $25 million in space, depending on what you take back, or $20 million in space, depending on the salary you take back. And that's with, you know, then all of a sudden you're paying Parker and Patty Mills and Kyle Lowry, but at the same time, you don't know when Parker is going to play again, and Mills would probably leave. But I'm just saying now.
Yeah, I'm not Parker saying, probably won't play at least till, like, the last couple months of next season, I would think.
Right, and so all right, so let's just say Patty Mills goes. Like, you can still, you could probably, if you dump Danny Green, you could then get the space for a free agent. But I still think LaMarcus Aldridge would be the better candidate. And I don't want to say Chris Paul going elsewhere is, like, a burden off the Spurs' shoulders, but the fact that you don't have to shell out as much to secure a point
guard, it's a silver lining for sure. Yeah.
So, I think that's what they would be up to. I was a little surprised that they weren't on the list of meetings for Gordon Hayward, though. I thought they might try to get involved.
I was just
going to
say, I thought they might crash that party, too.
They should have.
That duo of Kawhi and Gordon Hayward could have been really interesting. One quick note on Kyle Lowry, just because I was curious while you were talking. Since he joined the Raptors in 2013-14... so over the space of four seasons, he's eighth in box plus minus in the entire NBA. Only Kawhi, Chris Paul, James Harden, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Stephen Curry, and Russell Westbrook are better. So if that's your consolation prize, that's pretty good. Yeah. I still don't think, obviously, Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard isn't Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant, but it's closer than Tony Parker and Kawhi Leonard were, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the defensive versatility that you add just there, because he's a much better defender than Patty Mills or Tony Parker, that's big. And, you know, you kind of look ahead a little bit to the summer of 2018, and when you have to account for, let's say you're paying Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry a combined, and I'll even throw this on the high end, let's say you're paying them $45 million combined. That's a lot different than paying about almost $60 million combined for Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard because of what Chris Paul's max would be. And so all of a sudden you're more flexible there. So I think that would be the natural route for the Spurs. I am interested to see what they do if they really can't get a free agent. You know, what do you do to kind of preserve your flexibility? While I guess you could just bring everybody back, but the sticking point, it's probably easy to get David Lee and to agree to a short-term deal. Same with Pau Gasol. But do you pay Jonathan Simmons what he's going to get in restricted free agency? Do you pay Patty Mills what he's going to get? And those would be two interesting things to consider if they're not, you know, adding this tangible impact player.
Yeah. What other option would they have to just go after a mid-level guy?
Right. But I'm
saying if no free agent does come, you still think they would let those guys walk? I guess it depends on what they're...
Jonathan Simmons, absolutely. I think they would let walk. It would depend on what his next contract is and how ridiculous. Patty Mills is tougher, especially when you don't have Tony Parker available. And, you know, is Javante Murray ready?
Yeah, he's probably not ready.
The Derrick Rose rumors are terrifying.
Although I do like DeJounte Murray.
I do too. He's been to more conference.
The Derrick Rose rumors are funny to me because on the one hand, he is a lot. Like, he's been a pretty serious negative for the last few years. But I think it would just be like the cherry on top of Greg Popovich's coaching legacy if he made him like
a good play,
legitimate point guard again.
If you think about it, maybe he's willing to sign a one-year deal too, because you know
rehabilitate
security because he just had his fourth knee surgery. But at the same time, like, what if the Spurs were just like? But at the same time, they're not going to have a ton of cap space to. But what if Derrick Rose signed a one-year or two-year deal? Maybe they'd be willing to do that. So I don't like it, and I don't think I would be shocked if it happened. But maybe that's a route they go because they don't want to invest long-term money. In Patty Mills. So, I don't know. That's very interesting to me. But I think, and I can't really think of anyone else the Spurs might go after besides George Hill,
and Lowry.
And Lowry now. I don't know if you like have anyone. I guess Derrick Rose. Just named him.
Derrick Rose and Gordon Hayward has been one that I've thought about for a couple weeks. But you'd think he would have a meeting scheduled with them.
Maybe they'll jump in at the last minute, like because you have to imagine after that Paul George trade went down, that the Spurs like had some sort of a summit. Like of the mind.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think a lot of dominoes will still fall.
Paul Millsap would be interesting there, even though he's old. But like maybe you work out a sign and trade with Atlanta or something because you don't want to. Or I don't know. He would be
awesome next to Kawhi.
Yeah, he would be fantastic. Looking at some of these. I don't know. There's just so much to touch upon. I don't even know, like, where to start.
Can do Gordon Hayward's free agency.
Well, I was actually going to say really quick, since we were on Kyle Lowry, the Raptors are kind of interesting because...
Yeah, they've been interesting to me ever since they traded for Serge Ibaka.
Because
if they bring everything back, including him, it's, like, wildly expensive.
Yeah, it's absurd. And the thing is this could kind of go one of two ways. Like now that Lowry's market is not, you know, he's not going to have a max contract from the Sixers to use as leverage anymore after they get Fultz. So if you're the Raptors, like maybe it's easier for them to find a middle ground because of his lack of leverage, or maybe they kind of like try and play hardball and say, we're not giving you a fifth year, or we're not, giving you a 4-year max, and he just bails, in which case, all of a sudden, I don't know why you would resign Ibaka to a $20 million a year contract.
No.
At that point, then Tucker and Patterson would obviously be gone.
The sad thing about that team is even if those guys do leave, they still won't have cap space, right?
If Lowry and
Ibaka are both gone, their hands are still pretty much tied because of DeRozan and Valanciunas. Am I wrong? I need to look up their salary real quick.
They wouldn't have a ton of cap space, but getting rid of Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry's holds would put them like right at the salary cap 99. Line. Yeah, around there, maybe 100. And then if you get rid of the, you know, $19.1 million total holds on Patterson and Tucker, now all of a sudden you're working with, but you've lost 4 free agents, and now you have, you know, let's say $15 million to replace them.
The other contract that's tough for them that they can't get out of is Damari Carroll.
Yeah, that would probably take
$15 million next year.
But there's a light at the end of the tunnel for that. They'll probably be able to trade him at least next offseason. And maybe, you know, he wasn't bad defending in some isolations last year. Maybe you can get by with him as a small ball 4. Just try those different things.
It would probably be better. I don't know if Dwayne Casey's willing to do stuff like that, though. He hasn't been so far.
He might have no choice. I guess it's interesting because they probably should try and trade Jonas Valanciunas, even though his deal isn't terrible. There's obviously Carroll. I would, if I was them and I knew that I could get Lowry back, I would trade DeMar DeRozan in a heartbeat.
What I was just going to say. Did you see, I don't remember if it was in a podcast or a tweet, but Zach Lowe said, I'd at least offer DeRozan for George just to see what they say.
And they probably say no, but.
But it'd be worth a shot to get out of that contract would be very valuable.
Is it at the point where no one would trade for him without a sweetener? Because I don't want to like demean his offensive game, but at the same time, like, go down the list of teams, like, who's giving up anything for him?
Yeah, overall, he doesn't help you that much, I don't think. And at $30 million a year, that would be tough to stomach for any team.
Maybe Phil Jackson, if he was still in New York and running the triangle, would have.
Yeah. He'd probably give it a shot. I'm with you. I like a lot of what he can do offensively, but
he was, and his playmaking kind of fell off this past year, I feel like, but in 2015, 2016, granted it was a contract year, but I feel like he was running pick and rolls like crazy. And there was literally, he looked so versatile and he shot.
Yeah, his assist numbers were starting to come up.
Yeah.
I guess he still averaged 4 this year, which is, that's decent for a wing. But it's just the shot selection and shooting 47% from the field is good, but you got to be able to hit some threes and you got to play some defense to have value nowadays.
Right. So that's a tough spot to be in. And maybe, you know, if Lowry decides to leave and you don't really know what to do with Ibaka and you're not going to keep Patterson and Tucker, maybe that's what gets Ujiri to start looking at the Knicks situation in the front office. Here's a scenario I thought about. What if, so we know the Hawks are open to signing and trading Millsap. It's like, what if there's a team that's, and I'm going to suggest one, but what if there's a team under the cap, can make room for Lowry, and then still has the assets to work, a sign and trade for Paul Millsap, and you should know where this is going, because I'm talking about Denver, who's already been linked to Paul Millsap a bunch of times, but, you know.
Love the idea of a Millsap-Jokic front court.
And, pair that with having Jamal Murray still on the roster with Kyle Lowry also running point. And you can offer, you know, if you're willing to give up one of your trillion stretch fours that you have now.
Yeah.
You have Trey Lyles, you have Tyler Lydon, you have
Juan Hernan Gomez should have some value. So I like him.
If you were willing to offer one of them and, you know, Kenneth Reed to match, like, are the Hawks saying no if they're planning on getting rid of Millsap anyway? I guess you need to throw another salary in there to make it work. But you have Darrell Arthur, although that's a lot of fours to give to Atlanta. But still, it's workable. So you go out, sign Lowry, and then try and broker a trade for Millsap. And, like, you've kind of – the only thing you've really given up at the end of the day is, one or two of your superfluous prospects. Like, maybe it's even Will Barton, who's going to be a free agent after next year anyway. So give up two, like, of your excess luxuries, and then it's cap space that it costs you. Like, in one of your contracts to match salary – to get Millsap and Lowry and then to still have Jokic and still have Jamal Murray. And maybe you definitely get out of a sign and trade, in my opinion, for Millsap without giving up Gary Harris. Because this, so that's just – that roster's scary, man.
Yeah, I feel like any team that's going to be talking with Denver this summer is going to be asking about Jamal Murray.
Right, but in the sign and trade, you just don't have the levers to ask for a prospect like that.
That's probably true. Yeah, I would love that lineup if they had Lowry, Millsap, and Jokic. And the numbers with Jokic and Gary Harris when they were on the floor together, that offense was absurd.
And Millsap, granted he's a little older, but if you can get him on a 3-year deal, you're already seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So it's just like
I think he can do a lot for Jokic,
right?
Exactly. That's where I was going. Like, Jokic's only weakness is defense, which can be a big one, obviously. But
his only weakness is half the game.
I think it's a little oversold with him. I don't think he's as bad as people think he is. Maybe just aspects of his defense
are a weakness. The Nuggets as a whole, when you watch them, like, he just wasn't in good situations. I don't know that he'll ever be the guy that can defend in space, but if you kind of have someone that's just a little bit more versatile at the four, or a little bit more reliable
like
at the
Millsap.
Four. Yeah, obviously. But yeah, then he can be that stationary rim protector, like, or closer to it, and just patrol the paint.
But just put your arms up. And, so I think Millsap's a perfect complement, too. I know that I think Blake Griffin has been linked to them, too, which I think is also very interesting.
It'd be fun offensively,
I think they're two
but
of the
be
best,
a disaster
like,
defensively.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think him and Jokic – I just did this the other day, so I should remember it. But I'm pretty sure him and Jokic are 1 and 2 or, like, 2 and 3 all-time for assist percentage for 6'10-plus players. So the passing between those two would be unreal. But like you said, the defense would be nightmarish. I don't know if it would be worse than Gallinari and Jokic, but it would still be pretty bad.
I think the defense would be worse because Gallinari's at least a little bit more – like he could defend some threes. If you have Blake Griffin like switch a 4-1 pick and roll, it's just not going to
– Although Gallinari's pretty bad on defense.
I do not deny that.
But with Denver, I mean, it's all about just – outscoring people anyway. So, I think Millsap is the better
now,
fit. They're a really interesting team. Go ahead.
Speaking of Griffin, though, we didn't touch upon this as a result of the Chris Paul trade. The Clippers. Do you think Griffin is going to be back with the Clippers?
So this is actually I did a poll on this on Twitter the other day. I said, is it more or less likely that he returns now that this trade has been done? And it was like 76% said he's more likely to leave now. And to me, it would be a little closer than that because I get him wanting to go now that it looks like the Clippers aren't going to be contending for anything. But I feel like there could be a little part of him that thinks, now I am the man. And there is some pull to that, I would think. It depends on the player, obviously. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
So Blake Griffin, now there's talk that he might not even be ready for next season, the start of it, and he's missed more than 80 games over the last three seasons. He's
his health is a big problem.
And they don't all, like it's never they don't necessarily seem to be related all the time. But if the Clippers are going to throw you 5 years and $172+ million,
know how you can turn that down.
Right, and if they're and again, I think he's in the same boat as Hayward though. So if you and well, we didn't bring this up with Hayward, but at 28, if you sign a 3-year deal and you a 4-year deal, excuse me, and you opt out after 3, you're 31, you're still in your prime, you're going to cash in one more time. If he has confidence, that's a gamble he can make. And I think at 28, I don't think you're necessarily in a position to headline a rebuild. So for me,
it is more of a gamble with him though, because if he continues to get hurt every season,
right.
And then it's going to be hard for a team to give him that 10-year veteran supermax.
Here's where I kind of fall on it. If the Clippers offer him that fifth year and the full max, it's done. Like, if they're willing to go that far. If they don't, or if he believes that he's going to opt out after – he wants to opt out after 3 years anyway, if his goal is to get to free agency one more time before his 32nd birthday, I think he should and would go to Miami, because I don't think Miami's going to get Hayward. And it's interesting with Miami. So Whiteside is kind of like a lesser DeAndre Jordan, not nearly as good defensively, but again, a lesser DeAndre Jordan. Goran Dragic is like this mid-end Chris Paul, again, not nearly as good on defense. Except, so you have that similar dynamic, let's say, between those three as the Clippers' big three, but now you have the Heat, who actually own a track record of getting good supporting castmates on the cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
You look at what they did with Rodney Magruder and what they've done with Wayne Ellington. They still have just these
and wins a coach goals. Who has really right. maximized a lot of players.
Right, and look, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, they would be gone as a result of the Blake Griffin addition, but they revived their careers or salvaged them or made their careers in Miami last year. So that for me, that would be the pick for him if he's leaving. If he's not, I mean, in a vacuum, I think he's a better fit in Miami at this point anyway, just because of where the Clippers seem like they're headed. And I want to know when the Bucks are going to make a trade offer for DeAndre Jordan, because that's the dream for me. but if he is going to leave Los Angeles, I would Miami to me would be the best fit. I like it much better than Boston and even much better than Denver.
What about Phoenix? There's reports that he's meeting with Phoenix this weekend.
I think it's great that Phoenix is consistently relevant.
they're trying.
Free agent pursuits, but I don't see it. And you have so many front court guys. Like we're
And they're like Bender and Len and just Marquise Chris. It just goes on and on there.
Right. So unless you're also planning to kind of like turn around and then trade.
Josh Jackson should probably play some four.
Right. I mean, I don't think he would be like one of the reasons to factor in, but with all those other guys, and you don't know what's going to happen with Lynn or Alan Williams. They're both restricted free agents. So it's just, I don't think they're like a real threat. I know they're really interested in Millsap. I mean, if Millsap's different, because if you're willing to just pay him the max, you know, like, and no other team would give him that.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So,
I think, even though Millsap's getting up there in age, I think there will be one or two teams that'll drive his market up.
I don't think the Nets can get there without dumping a salary, and I don't necessarily think they have the salary to dump. But the Nets would be in a heartbeat for me, would be interesting as a team that could.
Yeah. It would be.
They're better positioned to max out like Otto Porter or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on that type of offer sheet, but they would be a team.
They love going for those restricted free agents.
You might as well in their position.
Yeah.
So I think now it's safe. So what's your call on Blake Griffin? Because you seem pretty torn.
Man, I don't know. I think he'll probably leave. My guess is he would bet on himself, even though it would be nice to be the unquestioned number one guy. In LA, and he does seem to like being around Hollywood. Like, he does stand up and he's in commercials, and he's a pretty good actor, actually. I do think the chance to win and just maybe a fresh start is going to win out. I would probably, so of the two options that you gave, I think bet on myself and try to get the 10-year supermax around 31 is probably what he'll end up doing.
That's what I kind of lean towards, too, for some reason. But I feel like both of us are underestimating the power of that 5-year deal they have on him.
Especially with – there's got to be somebody in his camp who at least is making him aware, like,
dude,
this security would be nice for you. Yeah. But who knows? It's tough to predict all of this.
I mean, the Chris Paul of the Rockets trade is just like
– Yeah.
It's almost like, why are we even doing this podcast?
In general has been – there's been a lot of surprises. Like, that was the biggest one, but I don't think anybody saw the Dwight Howard trade coming. The D'Angelo Russell one was kind of surprising, even though there was rumblings about them moving him. It happened, I think, quicker than I thought it would. And I think the offseason is just going to get crazier and crazier. It's like, we had an episode a few weeks ago where we were all excited for this offseason to see, our team's going to try and catch the Warriors, or are they going to try and wipe the slate clean and wait till they're bad again? And to me, it's been every bit as fun as we anticipated.
Oh, absolutely. And it's good to see. I think what it signifies with this Rockets Chris Paul move, that maybe there will be more teams who are prepared to try and go at the Warriors, even if they fail, than people were like, oh, people are just going to fold. Teams are going to fold. The fact that the Rockets didn't, I think, is not a sign of what everyone's going to do, but it you know, maybe the Celtics get a little bit more aggressive. Maybe the Raptors try and work something out. Maybe the Wizards, we know they want Paul George. Even John Wall kind of trashing Otto Porter as he's asking for Paul George.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That was absolutely dumb. Like, that, I don't know if his heart was in the right place.
I don't know if you should ever talk about your current teammates.
So I want to blow through, since we're kind of getting to the time limit here, I want to blow through a couple more issues. My favorite understated one is Andre Iguodala. Like, what
did that's you see? Suddenly gotten bigger today, I think.
Did you see my tweet this afternoon about it?
I don't think so.
So, like, if, you know, he's, so there are supposed to be, like, seven teams that are going after him. I
did
feel like
see that.
It's going to be, and I said, like, Timberwolves are going to offer Iggy 3 years, $60 million. Iggy's going to accept, and then the Cavs are going to send an unprotected first-round pick to the Wolves for cash considerations. Because it's like, it was a joke, but like, what I'm getting at is, if your teams, like, why not just chip away at the Warriors Foundation in any way you can? And you know you can't do it with the core four just yet. And if you offer, people said I was stupid for saying 3 years, $60 million, but one, Shams Charina mentioned $20 million a year in his
I think he's going to get around there.
Right, and 3 years, again, I don't. That's not a good contract, but like, if Iggy has, first of all, 3 years, after year one is over, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. And there is a chance with the way Iggy defends and with his playmaking, like, you could get at least two good years out of him. And it's, and the bonus, especially for a team like the Timberwolves, who might be kind of a bona fide playoff team now, and they're not necessarily going to challenge the Warriors, but they have an incentive, I think, as a team that's competing to try and chip away at that foundation. And, you know, if I'm the Kings, I'm overpaying Sean Livingston, because you have that kind of, he can back up De'Aaron Fox. We know he doesn't care about coming off the bench. You could find extra minutes for him at the 2 and 3, and maybe he's the good locker room presence you need, because they don't really have that veteran right now after waiving Anthony Tolliver, which I thought was kind of dumb.
How much of an impact do you think it makes on the Warriors if he leaves? I think a lot of Warriors fans would call me crazy for saying this, but I think there's a decent argument that he's their fourth best player.
Oh, for maybe four. Klay Thompson's a better player, I think, defensively, because of how strong Andre Iguodala is and his ability to match up with James. And I guess his ability to run
so much more as a playmaker too.
Right.
And so, I mean, Klay Thompson is an unbelievable scorer and shooter. There's nobody who gets hot like him. Like, 60 points in 29 minutes, 37 points in a quarter. But those things happen, like, once a year, obviously.
Right. And
Iguodala is just such a steady force on both sides of the ball.
I think the Warriors...
Even though he doesn't score.
The Warriors are going to always have enough playmaking and enough shooting. Not that I would say Iguodala is expendable, but we say this now until, you know, what happens when Thabo Sefolosha or PJ Tucker just agree to take a pay cut to play for the Warriors after Iguodala leaves. It's just...
Yeah, I think those guys are significant steps down from him, though.
But PJ Tucker on defense, I think, would be comparable.
He's good, but I don't think... to me, PJ Tucker guards threes and fours.
Right,
I feel like Iguodala can reasonably guard, like, one through four. And run the offense. Like, I think a lot of the reason that Stephen Curry can get so many, like, off-ball opportunities is because they have guys like Livingston and Iguodala. And maybe they think eventually Klay Thompson can grow into that, but he hasn't shown it yet.
It would hurt, especially defensively in the playoffs, if we're looking at specific matchups against LeBron James. It would, and again, that's why I think some teams should, and maybe they will. I think they definitely should.
Do you know where Iguodala ranks in real plus minus?
Position-wise or NBA?
No, this is the entire league, all players.
12.
And this is just okay, so it's not quite that high.
Oh.
But 26,
that's not
which
bad.
Is still really high for a reserve. And that's just one number, obviously. But man, I think he's really, really important. Now, is losing him a big enough deal for me to pick somebody else to win the title? Definitely not. But
if I'm a team, I'm
I certainly
doing
think
it.
It's impactful.
Right. If I'm Phoenix, I'm considering doing it. You know, if the Paul Millsap, Blake Griffin things don't work out, that's just something. I'm also interested to see. This is totally random. I want to see who's going to overpay Andre Roberson to get him out of Oklahoma City.
Maybe Oklahoma City.
The other thing I want to talk about before we get, because Hayward's my favorite topic, so I wanted to save it for last. The Knicks.
Okay.
I don't think we can get away without talking about them. I was elated.
Did you see a tweet just
David Griffin
while we were talking from Shelburne? Yeah, that Griffin has been in touch with the Knicks.
Right. That's a good move. I think the names that have been thrown out there, even though they're probably smoke screens, but even Zach Lowe on the Low Post today said that R.C. Buford is someone that the Knicks were looking at. And my response was like everyone's response, why would he consider leaving? And Lowe was just saying, there's one, James Dolan's going to double your salary at least.
Yeah, I was going to say they could just throw tons of money at him.
And two, if you turn around the Knicks of all franchises, like you're not, you're just
you're in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah. So if the appeal is how futile you are, then the Knicks have a lot of appeal, if that's what we're judging. But also they threw
out, can I, one more thing on Iguodala. I just noticed this. Sorry. He had a higher true shooting percentage than Klay Thompson last year.
Yes, I actually did know that. So
that's wild.
I think you anyway, can make the case he's their fourth most valuable player. I don't like Klay Thompson. I think
I'm pretty comfortable saying it.
Yeah. I guess I just feel like Klay Thompson just individually is a better player, but Iguodala is more valuable to what the Warriors do.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off. You're talking about your favorite team.
My least favorite team. so the names and, you know, Masai Ujiri, David Griffin, R.C. Buford's like a complete just pipe dream. But I think that I think that the fact they're looking at these names is probably a good idea. But we have to see who they actually hire. And while James Dolan was right to fire Phil Jackson, the timing was just bizarre. Like, you let him make your draft pick. what is your appeal to free agents? I know Steve Mills is going to be better at pitching free agents than...
I think the number one pitch is we don't have Phil Jackson anymore.
Right. I think the Knicks should go after... If they're going to go after, like, an aging point guard to try and, like, bridge the Neil Aquina era, Kyle Lowry would be fantastic. They're gonna have trouble getting to even $20 million in cap space, but they could carve out more by, you know, maybe you move Courtney Lee. You're not gonna move Joakim Noah most certainly. Maybe you're able to finally move Melo, but he would be a target. I don't think they're gonna appeal to anybody. And so I guess my opinion on them, to kind of just put a bow on it, is it's good that Jackson's gone, but the Knicks have yet to prove that once they pivot that they can pivot into anything productive. And even when they, you know, sometimes accidentally do, like Donnie Walsh, he was pretty good. Like, he still traded away draft picks, and then they deviate away from him. And then they fire their president, Glenn Grunwald, after that 2012-2013 campaign. They just never make sense, and I don't think you can trust them to make sense now. The silver linings for me is, or the only silver lining for me is, if the Knicks are actually appealing because of their financial resources and their crappy-ass basketball for the past couple of decades, James Dolan kind of showed he'll stay out of the way with Phil Jackson in charge. So if you get a David Griffin, if you get, for some reason, a Masai, and you're able to just let them do their thing, that's probably the most encouraging. We have to see who they actually put in power, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to tell whether this team is finally on the right track. And as a last thing to say, Phil Jackson, I don't care who was talking about this, how lucrative the trade packages are, trading Kristaps Porzingis and making the inquiries and being publicly open about him being available is one of the stupidest things that I've ever seen from an executive.
Yeah.
People are like, well, if they get two draft picks, you literally make those trades to take those picks to get a player like Porzingis.
Yep.
So to use him as this means to dump Noah's contract is
dumb. He's like a potentially generational player.
Right. So it's just, and, you know, who would have thought that the contract the Knicks shouldn't have given Joakim Noah is actually what saved them from trading Kristaps, because no team was going to take his contract.
Yeah, that whole thing was insane. I couldn't believe when he was making those public comments about that, and the comments themselves, I just thought, what are you doing?
Dumb as hell. And it would be so Knicks now to turn around, because they're probably not going to hire anyone before free agency is over. They're just going to go out and try and, like, overpay Jeff Teague or something. Like, he's already been linked to them.
Would still be better than Derrick Rose, but go ahead.
I guess Derrick Rose would at least have the benefit of being on a short-term deal. But, you know, I don't want
to... Yeah.
Is George Hill a good fit with the roster? Yes. Jeff Teague might be, even Kyle Lowry, but like these dudes are older. Like even Jeff Teague is going to be 29 at the start of next season. Like let's cut the crap with this already. Like, you know, like let's like yeah. have them rebuild.
I thought about George Hill while you were talking, but then I thought it just seems like he would be much more likely to take like $5 million a year less to go play for the Spurs right. or some other team that can actually win.
So it's, and again, he'd be a good fit, but like he's 31.
It's just, yeah.
I think now's a good time to get back to Hayward, and I'm noticing that, and this is kind of interesting to me, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He published why Gordon Hayward should stay with the Utah Jazz on Medium about 15 minutes ago.
Interesting.
I find that very interesting that he was on the Low Post recently. He's intentionally passionate, and he knows his stuff, and I like yeah, listening he does. To him. It's just, it feels like a little bit of a, is that like a gray area of having like the radio voice of the Jazz publish that piece? I guess it's not, but that's kind of
they've given him quite a bit of freedom with that postcast or that podcast.
Right, so maybe it's not. I just
so they must be okay with it.
I'm not saying it's good, bad. I found it interesting because I don't, you know, you don't see that.
No, you really don't. There aren't a lot of radio announcers who have as much of a voice outside the play-by-play as he does, though.
And he's, again, he knows, like, some of the stats he throws out on Twitter and even hearing him talk on Lowe's podcast, he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he does a ton of research, for sure.
For Hayward, and this is the point I was making before the podcast, and we touched on it with Griffin, what swayed me now to say he's going to Boston is that Hayward's 27, he's wildly underrated, he was finally an all-star. If I'm him, I want the 4-year deal to set myself up for the Supermax after 3. And yeah. You immediately, like, the Jazz lose that leverage of the 5-year deal. Like, maybe $170+ million is too much for him to turn down. But if the difference, if we're looking at this as he wants to set himself up for free agency again in 3 years, the difference between getting 8% raises with the Jazz and 5% raises with another team is just, you know, that's going to be like a difference of like $6 million over 3 years or maybe $10 million, and that's not going to be too much.
Why couldn't he do that? Why couldn't he set himself up for the Supermax with the Jazz?
Well, that's the Jazz's fault. If they don't let him go exploring in restricted free agency, he wouldn't have had this player option after 3 years. They could have gotten
what I mean is why can't what makes you think they wouldn't give him sort of the same, or he wouldn't take that same route here.
No, I'm not saying he wouldn't, but you lose a bit of your leverage because now technically the money is equal everywhere. And I think you can fairly easy talk yourself into the Boston Celtics with Brad Stevens, with the potential to maybe trade for Paul George. That's an easy situation to talk yourself into regardless, but it becomes exponentially easier when the money is essentially equal.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors to think about that make it, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I'm really nervous. There's what you just mentioned. I think the East is significantly worse than the West. Since I've been playing the pessimist most of the time, maybe I'll make a case for him to stay.
Are you just going to say Rudy Gobert and sign off?
I could. I feel like that should be enough. So in Utah, I think in Boston, especially if they get Paul George, there is reason to believe that he could be like a third and on some nights even a fourth option. And I don't know if that's – I don't know where that ranks on his list of priorities. In Utah, he's the unquestioned number one option. In Utah, he's also a potential like – legendary player. I think if he played his entire career in Utah, he would go down as no worse than the third best player in franchise history behind Karl Malone and John Stockton. He'd probably get a statue next to those guys. In Boston, to me, he's just another on a long list of names in this storied history, which that could have its pull too for Boston. To have a chance to be a part of that history, I think that could play into it. The other thing with Utah, and you mentioned it already, it's Rudy Gobert, and I could just say his name and sign off, but
Is he even as good as Hassan Whiteside, though?
Oh, my gosh.
You know I'm trolling you, right?
I know. Okay. But you would not believe how many Heat fans still think that.
Do you remember way back when like, Gobert was first starting his rise, and so was Hassan Whiteside, and I wrote an article about who would you rather have, and I picked Gobert, and people, like, freaked out.
People probably went ballistic, yeah. They will still push for Whiteside to this day. I talked about it on Twitter today, but it's super annoying to me that the majority of the articles and podcasts and other stuff that I hear about Gordon Hayward's free agency, if they're talking about him going to the Heat, they talk about how he makes sense with Whiteside, or they, with Celtics, they talk about that situation. Most of these prediction articles don't even mention Rudy Gobert, who to me is the best player in any of these three teams. He doesn't do as much on a basketball court as some other guys. Like, he's not a great passer, he's not a great shooter, but what he does defensively and what he does as a rim runner, it makes more of an impact than any other player on any of these teams, I think. He was second in the league in win shares this season. The only player who had more was James Harden. I think he was like ninth in real plus minus. He was first in true shooting percentage. And the other thing that's really perfect about Rudy Gobert and Gordon Hayward is Rudy Gobert's usage is like 15. It's like half of what Isaiah Thomas's is. He took fewer than 8 shots a game this year. So you have this perfect complementary player in Utah, along with being a legend, sticking with the team that drafted you. I think there is some pull, and I do think Utah makes a ton of basketball sense. But like I said at the beginning, something just feels like foreboding with this whole thing to me.
Do you know one of my biggest, I guess, to detract Hayward from signing in Boston? Does it necessarily make sense to have Hayward and Paul George on the same team when they effectively play? Like, I don't want Paul George or Gordon Hayward playing the two, and you're not gonna. How do you play them at the four if you still have Jay Crowder? Like, because you have to assume that the Pacers probably don't give up Jay Crowder in a Pacers deal.
I've heard a few people talk about this, how it's like a weird fit if they get both George and Hayward. And I actually don't. That wouldn't worry me at all if I was Boston.
Well, you talk about Peckinwater. Like, where does he go in that? He's fourth, right? You mentioned that if George Hill's Paul George.
I think he would probably be third. It would probably be Thomas, George, and Hayward, and then Horford. But I feel like there would be some nights where like Horford might get more touches. But what I was saying about positions is I really don't think it matters. I think Hayward can play 2 through 4. I think George can play 2 through 4. I think you just have Thomas, 3 guys who play 3 positions, and Horford.
My issue is I don't want necessarily Hayward and George having to defend consistently some of the guys who might play the two, or when they're going to have to, because Isaiah,
I feel like you could trust George to guard twos. Jay Crowder to guard fours, right?
Well, here's my thing is that Isaiah Thomas can't guard ones, so you're going to stash him on a
Yeah, he can't guard anybody. That's a good point.
You're going to stash him on a two, most likely, or a three, and then all of a sudden you have Hayward or George defending a lot of point guards.
But the thing about it is, I think one way to cover for Isaiah Thomas is get as many like switchy, rangy wings as you can. And it makes it a little bit more palatable.
You know what? The Celtics of all teams are going to make it work, but it's just like, you know, between having those, so let's say Gordon Hayward, Paul George, maybe Jay Crowder, and then also having maybe at least one of, if not both, of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you don't really have like an actual shooting guard in the bunch, which
to me is fine. I honestly think in 10 years, it's just going to be like 4 small forwards and a center.
Right, but I'm just thinking in terms of how many, I guess when it's by committee, you won't have a problem defending so many point guards. That's just the issue. And you have Marcus Smart. There's a lot of potential there, but a Jimmy Butler type to me would have made more sense than a Paul George type going after Hayward.
I actually thought Jimmy Butler made more sense than Gordon Hayward. When they were seriously considering that trade during the draft, it just, because he's on a cheaper contract, he's got a couple years left on that cheaper deal, and I actually think he's better than Hayward.
I think he is too, but I think if you were ranking in terms of players that would be easier fits, like just coming onto a new team and fitting in. I think it would go Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, you'd probably go with Hayward there for sure.
Hayward,
yeah.
Paul George, then Butler. So like Butler would have been the hardest player to fit in. And Paul George might even be easier to fit in because he doesn't need to play on the ball as much as Hayward. But Hayward's a lot more adaptable than people give him credit for.
Yeah, he was completely off the ball before Ty Corbin took over. Like that's all he did was really like a catch and shoot guy for Al Jefferson.
Now, what is here would be my final question. What is the reaction if he leaves in Utah? Like, are they going to be bitter?
I think they'll be pissed at first, but it won't be anything like Darren Williams or Carlos Boozer. I think it'll be like amicable within a year, probably. But I think there'll be a fairly volatile reaction at first, at least from like the most passionate crowd. I mean, me personally, like you said, I've become a Jazz fan ever since Bleacher Report assigned me to them like 5 or 6 years ago. And so I'm like not as passionately connected to the team as some of the fans are, but I would be upset, but I would actually, there's a little part of me that thinks it'd be kind of cool to see him play for Stevens. So, I don't know if there's a lot of fans in that same boat, but I guess my overall thing would it wouldn't be as bad as Darren Williams.
I think just because of how like the campaign to get him to stay, I think they would be.
Yeah, that could build up some of the hostility, like the whole Stayward thing, and
right.
His wife posted on Instagram the other day a picture of a grade school class. The teacher had the students, like all 30 students, write letters to Hayward to convince him to stay. And his wife took a picture of the letters and posted them on Instagram.
Wow. Also, yeah. His dad's been liking some Jazz stuff too, right?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I think he liked a tweet about trying to convince Hayward to stay in Utah.
So we talked about the Instagram clues for Hayward to Boston a couple episodes ago. It's only fair we talk about Instagram and staying in Utah.
I think right now, I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed in Utah, still in Boston, but I think it might just be slightly at this point, like 55-45 for me. Like, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion by any stretch.
Yeah. Maybe I would go like 50-40-10 or something. Like, there's a tiny little chance it happens for Miami.
Do you? I just don't.
You don't see any chance?
No, I just don't. I'm not going to be one of those people.
I'm always worried about those Pat Riley meetings, man.
Pat Riley, I don't think he knows what he wants to do this year. He was talking about keeping his own free agents, and he's talking about signing stars, but then he's talking about having a plan A and B, but he doesn't have a plan C. Like, it was just.
I would say it's a distant third, but I'm not ready to like completely count them out.
So, I think that kind of wraps this up, and that means that it's going to be time for an honorary certain segment that we have neglected the past few times, and it is called
Bacon! Bacon! Where's the bacon? I smell bacon! 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 Gotta be bacon! Only one thing smells like bacon! That's bacon!
So I kind of wanted to touch really quick upon all these layoffs that have been happening in the writing world, and most recently it was Fox Sports, and I don't know if you caught that piece on Awful Announcing about the behind the scenes, how that came about, and with MTV now doing it too, and all these sites shifting to just video and going all in on video. That's some of the dumbest stuff that I just, like, the logic is just stupid. People will still read. I understand the landscape is changing, and I don't necessarily want to get into that, even though I think any place that gives up a writer like Dan Carson or Brian Phillips from MTV, like,
yeah,
those are objectively just dumbass decisions. Like, you're just losing talented people. And as far as videos go, I'm loyal to the people that do them that I really like. You know, a Howard Beck video for Bleacher Report, I'm going to watch. And I'm going to watch a lot of Bleacher Report videos because I work for them. But I'm not sitting there watching these ESPN and Fox Sports videos. I don't give a crap what hot take Colin Cowherd had at Fox Sports that you can turn into then an aggregation of your own information. I just don't care. And I understand it's different in the industry, but people need to find a way to monetize writing, and maybe better monetize podcasts now. They just need to do a better job of it, because these are talented people and there's still a market for it. there were all these SI writers tweeting out these long form pieces because one of their idiotic editors who does like these hot click lists was talking about how these today's America, I guess, or today's industry, the audience doesn't have the attention span to follow these long form pieces. Like, I get it. There's going to be short form content, the viral stuff. It all matters. And I do a lot of slideshows, that stuff. It matters. And I understand the landscape is changing, but to just commit so far to one side is so dumb. And I think we need to pour one out for these people. And the last thing I'm going to say is, when you have people losing their jobs, talented people losing their jobs, do not go on Twitter and talk about how thankful you are to have your job. Do not go on Twitter and talk about how these people's work is worthless because they're not hot clicks of half-naked girls or guys, whatever you're into, in bikinis. Like, get off your goddamn soapbox and let these people have a moment and kind of just pour one out for them, because this is sad. And I don't want to be the old man that says it needs to be all writing and let's get back to newspapers. Like, I get it. So many people are affected by this industry, but like, let's get off the high horse and like, let's understand that these are people, talented people, who don't have places to work immediately and they might never get better jobs, or maybe they will. But when you have talented people who are good at their craft all of a sudden not being paid to ply that craft, something is wrong. And yeah, that turned out to be longer than I thought. But that Fox Sports piece was like some of the crappiest crap that I've ever. The Jamie Horowitz guy is just like, he's a moron. Like, it's just that strategy is just terrible. And I don't care if he was using that meeting where he trashed everyone's work as a warning and pushing this all in video. It's a dumb strategy. And even if it partially works, I come back to the fact that you have people who are amazing at their job and good at their craft, not plying that craft, not being paid to do it, it's objectively stupid.
Yeah, I'm with you. The ESPN ones were obviously like the most publicized. I don't think I knew really anybody from that round, but I still felt awful for every single one of them.
Right.
And then the Fox Sports one, really, I mean.
That hit home.
There was nothing like that really warned me about that one. It just kind of came out of nowhere. And I saw it first because of Dan Carson, who you mentioned, who is just, I think he's hilarious. He's one of the,
like, it's that, and the whole thing is trying to find a unique spin. And like, what Dan Carson does is unique as hell.
Yeah. He's hilarious. I think he's one of the best people on basketball Twitter.
Without question.
And when you mentioned him, I thought, why not just put that guy on videos?
Right. And that's the other thing. If you're going to pivot into this, why not try developing some of these writers into that? You know, writers can be adaptable. They might be socially awkward, but they're pretty adaptable and versatile. Like, give them a chance.
And the other thing,
writing off other people's coattails. This stuff just, like, that gets me. Even, you know, you brought up about ESPN, and I think there was clearly more to that. It was cord cutting. I think it had more to do than just with the strategy shift, because they were talking about versatility.
They're like hemorrhaging money bad.
Right. But to lose Ethan Sherwood Strauss, again, objectively dumb because he's talented. And then the thing that got me is they talked about how they need people who are versatile. So, of course, naturally, you should lay off Mark Stein, who does so much of your NBA reporting on TV. He does a lot of your soccer stuff. That's not versatile at all.
Yeah, it's very weird. I don't know if I'm like many internet users, but when I go to an article on like Sports Illustrated or really any website, one of the very first things I do is get rid of that autoplay video that almost every website has now. I don't care about the videos for the most part.
It seems like the companies that are paying for advertisements, they seem to prefer video more than the audience does. And I don't necessarily have stats to back that up, but it's, you know, and if I'm on a subway, if I'm traveling, like if I'm at, I guess I work remotely, but if you're in an office, like you're going to read something before you watch a video.
Yeah, I am for sure.
So
that's weird.
To commit this far into it, to me, is just stupid. And again, we're clearly biased, but I think there's something objectively wrong with what MTV and Fox Sports and other sites have done. Where even, you know, a place like Vocative is just shuttering completely their sports content. Or what you saw with Yahoo, you know, Kelly Dwyer and Eric Freeman's still writing for them, but I think he was part. Like, that's just, it just doesn't, I don't know, that stuff, there seems something objectively wrong, even stepping away from it.
Yeah. It's definitely not the happiest, most cheery time to be a writer. Like you, I feel for all those guys
right,
who've been laid off. It's awful.
And I think we just need to keep, like, I don't want to hear the tweets about, or see the tweets, read the tweets. I can't talk about, oh, I'm just so fortunate to be where I am, and oh, it makes me thankful I work for so-and-so company. Like, shut up.
I agree, that's not necessary at all.
You're expendable. Me and you are expendable just as much as anyone, probably more so than most.
I could go anytime, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, and especially at the day of when you have that SI guy, I can't even remember his name right now, kind of just preaching from a soap, like that stuff is just like, shut up.
Yeah, I agree. If you want to lament this plight that's taking on writers with Dan on Twitter, he's at Dan Favalli. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. As always, we are glad you guys tuned in. We love a subscription on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. Give us a rating or a review. Any of those spots that would help us, we'd really appreciate it. We'll be back again throughout the off season, talking about what's all the craziness that's bound to take place over the next couple weeks of free agency. And until then, we leave you with the sign off and the shout out to Bino Udrih.